Welcome to Synthaholics, your weekly show of Star Trek. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Aaron O'Brien.
Not Holly.
Not Holly.
Hi, not Holly.
I'm anti-Holly today.
Anti-Holly.
Yes.
Is that like antimatter?
Well, you can tell because I've been very ambitious.
Oh, well, that's good.
Just kidding. I am indeed Holly.
It's just the other side of Holly.
Yeah.
Have you been vaulting ambition?
Have I nice. Been schwat?
It's just a
Discovery
name, Discovery episode. Vaulting ambition.
Yes. Oh.
Yeah. Cool
We don't have any Star Trek news this week. Aaron and Holly still have not seen Calypso, so we can't commiserate on that.
Commiserate.
But the new short tracks will be out before we record next week, so we can talk about that beforehand on the show.
Yes.
If we happen to see them by then.
It'll be fun.
Hoping Discovery Season 2 will be great. I'm looking forward to it. I kind of sad that'll push back our crazy Alex Jones ripoff of Trek Wars.
Well, you know, I guess Discovery takes precedence.
Oh, yeah. So. We gotta go with what the news has given us, and that gives us more time to prepare. So hopefully we will prepare and not waste time.
Oh, maybe. Maybe a little both.
A little bit of both, because it is so the holidays this, coming up.
Yeah, it is. I know. It came fast. I'm like, is it really December already?
Actually, today's a holiday.
Is it?
The first night of Hanukkah.
Oh, there you go.
Well, thank you for coming out for the first night of Hanukkah, Holly.
You're welcome.
So this episode, we are talking about the Next Generation episode, Realm of Fear, which is season 6, episode 2, and it first aired September 28th, 1992. Pretty fun episode, if I don't say so myself.
I liked it, but I think I liked it because it's kind of a reflection of my own anxieties.
Nice.
So it was entertaining to watch, but also mildly painful to watch because I could sympathize with the guy.
You identified with everything going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, you know, growing up watching this, I didn't really like Barclay that much. He kind of got under my skin, but now I totally, like, I'm really into it. It's like, he brought everything, I don't know, it's so great to see a character who's a side character almost take over the whole show, so.
I always loved Barclay episodes. I was thrilled that he was in First Contact, although I wish he had a bigger part. It was just like a walk-on role, which is unfortunate. I wish you could have had a bigger part in First Contact, because I've always loved seeing Barclay on screen. And maybe this might not be his best episode, but it's still a good episode. I think my favorite one's where he takes over the computer and becomes smarter than the ship and interfaces directly through it with the holodeck. That was an awesome episode.
Yes, but we're not talking about that episode, Dave. Nope. So let's get into the episode itself. The show begins with the Enterprise is going to check out the USS Yosemite. It's a ship that seemed to be disappeared. And when they find it, it's in this plasma stream that looks like this neutron star is sucking the plasma or the energy off this other star.
It was a lucky shot, sir.
And the ship, the Yosemite, is stuck within the plasma stream, and they can't send any messages. They can't tractor it out, so they're going to beam over. But the only problem is, it might have some issues with the plasma beaming over, but Chief O'Brien says that he should be able to tie into their transporter, so it should be like a little safer.
No, I thought Barclay said that.
Oh, Barclay, you're right, yeah. Barclay. Yeah. So, when Barclay his idea,
they're going to bridge the network transporters.
They send. Worf, Riker, and Crusher with Geordi and Barclay are going to all go over to this Yosemite. And when they start being over there, Barclay just gets more and more nervous. And then we realize that Barclay is deathly afraid of transporting. And he ends up running out of the room just saying, I can't do it. And
I love how they send Worf first, though. It's like, if something wrong happens, it'll happen to him. It'll be fine.
I know. Isn't that funny? I thought it was hilarious that Riker was like, you go first.
You go first. It's just like in the... was the best of both worlds? No, it's the first time they meet the Borg. Q who? Whenever, like Picard's like, Worf, go get the Borg, and Worf's like, Ensign, go do it.
Yeah, it's like
chain of command rolls downhill.
That's right. Pretty funny, but I just thought it was funny. He sent him first because it was dangerous. So
Klingons like, love their danger. Is it honorable to die in a transporter accident?
Yeah,
probably not.
If you did it, you know, in order to save the rest of the crew.
Yes, but so they all get over to the Yosemite. All right. Next scene we get is Barclay is in Counselor Troy's office, and he is explaining to her how he has mortal fear of transporter. He's just super scared of dematerializing and never rematerializing. And interesting back and forth between Troy and Barclay. It seems like she's definitely trying to help him and saying, yeah, it's a normal fear. People feel that. It brings out also a way to relax, this thing called plexing, where you get some nerve on the back of your neck or on the side of your neck.
I had a real issue with this scene because when you have such a huge anxiety about something for your whole life, you don't just get over it in a moment. And, you know, even Troy, she's like, it takes time and we can start small. And here's this thing we can do called plexing. And he does it once and he's like, I'm ready to go. And she's like, no. Yeah. And he goes. And it's like, I mean, maybe that's like the whole point of that was that he's braver than his fear. But like for somebody who has a true anxiety about this and they've had it since childhood, it didn't make sense that he would have gone straight in. If it was that he was actually like brave enough to and not so cowardly, then perhaps, but they didn't play it that way. So yeah, I took issue with that a little.
I see it. It was almost comical actually how he just goes, yeah, I think I'm going to do it now.
Yeah.
And I mean, the thing I'll give a little bit of a pass is that obviously you're on the Enterprise. These are like the cream of the creme of officers and personnel. So you don't get on there for just, I mean, obviously Barclay must be super brilliant because he's too freaking weird anyways to be on a ship like that. But maybe he has enough fortitude to say I can muster through it.
Let's not forget that he's got a crush on Deanna Troi via his holodeck programs because she was like the goddess in the center of his program. Maybe he just is like, oh, I like her, so like she gave me this technique, so the technique is good enough to get me through it.
Maybe.
And he says like the only sometimes the way to get past something is go right through it or something like that. And then Deanna goes, yeah, I guess I said that. But so he says, yep, I'm going to do it. I'm fine. And he walks out her door kind of abruptly. And then he heads up to the transporter room. And then Miles O'Brien kind of goes into how he has a fear of spiders and how he had to crawl through these Jeffrey tubes with these Talarian hook spiders and to fix this emitter array. And, you know, he said it was the hardest thing I ever did, but, you know, trying to make him feel better, but it doesn't seem to really do anything for Barclay. He's still like, okay, still fucking scary as shit. but he goes through it and he does beam over and he makes it over the Yosemite. And when they get to the Yosemite, we find out there's no survivors and the escape pods have not been launched. And Dr. Crusher finds a body in the ship's engineer. And we find that when Barclay comes over, LaForge asks him to download the ship's science logs, and they start collecting these fragments of a broken container that was found in the transporter area. And
probably because Worf beamed on top of it and crushed it.
Sorry. Picard has a quick communication with Admiral Hayes. She says that the Ferengi says the Cardassians are just destroyed two of their freighters, and they wonder if the Yosemite was attacked by the Cardassians as well. So we get a little Cardassian thing. Yes, in there. Next, we get back. The landing party come back to the Enterprise. But when Barclay comes over, he's the last one to come over, he finds this weird worm creature swimming in the matter stream. And it looks like it's going to kiss him, but it ends up touching his arm. And he steps off the transporter room and he's all freaked out.
I kind of took issue with that, too, though. Like, he clearly had an issue with transporting. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have him go first back to the ship.
Yeah, they left him the last guy to come over.
Yeah, it just seemed like,
yeah, it's sort of like a plot.
Yeah, they had to, but like still.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty funny too. What'd you guys think of that that weird creature?
I think it was kind of spot on for Star Trek.
I think it was a bit funny to start singing to him or something like that.
No, I think this is subpar for Star Trek. They could have done better, I think. This is Doctor.
This
was Doctor Who level of camp.
Oh, hey, don't talk about Doctor Who.
So maybe that's why I didn't mind it. But no, I didn't think it was that bad. I mean, you're in transport, so I mean, they could have shown you. You know, it wasn't as bad as those little bird things.
Bird things?
From the original series.
Oh, God.
those weird bird flower things.
The macaws!
That could have been worse, right? Right.
Yeah, cat's paw. Yeah, aliens at the end of cat's paw. Yeah, those are pretty awful. So Barclay is, in the next scene we have Barclay's in the engineering with LaForge, and they're putting these logs together and trying to figure out what happened on the Yosemite. And he keeps on asking LaForge, have you ever had anything weird happen to you when you transport? And LaForge just kind of dismisses, no, I haven't. Then goes into like, you know, like, have you seen anything weird? And he goes, sometimes I see like these weird, you know, something in the matter stream that's like, you know, real pretty to look at or something. Mm-hmm. And then Barclay, and like Forge is like, Geordi's like, what are you getting at? What happened? And he says that he had an experience that he saw something in this matter stream. And he's like, I know it can't be real, but, you know, it's really weird. So to Geordi's credit, he says, well, let's check it out. After we're done here, let's run a diagnostics on the transporter. So that was pretty cool of him.
Yeah. I just feel like they're such, you know, as you said earlier, they're the creme de la creme of Starfleet, and they didn't really catch what was going on. Like, and even Barclay didn't say, okay, it kind of looked like a worm.
Like, he didn't even really describe it that well.
It had a mouth.
It's like an eye floater.
Yeah. I was expecting him to say, perhaps it was something in my eye, but no. It was a worm, damn it.
Well, so we get back at the transporter room. LaForge and O'Brien and Barclay are all going through like the diagnostics, and they're going through everything. And Barclay kind of lays out what he's got a fear of transporting, and that, you know, how if it's like even 0.001% off, you know, you're dead, you're gone. And they saying basically that there's only been a couple accidents, so like 2 to 3 accidents the last 10 years. And it's the safest way to travel. And then he brings up transporter psychosis. And O'Brien's like, there hasn't been a case of transporter psychosis for 50 years.
Right.
So.
Damn it, been in the old timers. That's what they got when they got to the transporter. They got the psychosis.
I did like how they kind of broke down some of the stuff with transporter, like how there's all these redundancies and stuff like that. So all these things wouldn't happen.
And Demo Heisenberg compensator, making that blue meth with his Heisenberg.
Mm-hmm. Good old Heisenberg. In sick bay, Crusher's looking at the burnt guy's body, the engineer that they found. And then he isn't alive, but all of a sudden he starts getting muscular activity. His heart starts beating, and then he starts breathing. She tries to bring him back, but he doesn't come back to life. He just, for a second, comes back to life.
Right, his organs.
Just kick in one at a time.
Become reactive. Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
But then it stops.
Yes.
It's like a zombie.
It would be cool if we had a zombie episode.
We'll get to that in Enterprise.
So then we get to the scene where Barclay is intent forward, trying to relax. And he's drinking water. You ever notice Barclay drinks a lot of water? A lot of water. It made me
in the episode itself?
Yes.
Or? Yeah.
made me want to pee constantly. How much
water he drank. I peed 16 times watching this one episode.
I did. When all of a sudden he starts getting a pain in his left arm and he pulls his sleeve back and there's this blue transporter looking effect going on. It's, yes.
Yeah. I love how no one notices this in the entire room.
Yeah, you know. Nobody knows his bark.
He was against the windows and he did turn around to look at it.
And let's face it, I think most people just conveniently ignore Barclay.
Probably.
You know, if you knew a Barclay, would you really be trying to hang out with him?
How rude.
How rude. So we get Barclay, next scene is back in his quarters. He's drinking lots of water and he starts asking computer about
10 degrees Celsius, by the way. Very important.
Well, then later he asks the computer, the computer's like, what temperature do you want? He's like, I don't care, just give me water.
Right. Could have been boiling hot.
They should have given him boiling hot. That would be great.
I was going to laugh. I was going to laugh. That's kind of a stupid thing to say.
I was, but then I did. I would have
laughed if it was warm water. I was actually thinking, oh, this is going to be great if it's warm.
Yeah.
Or like lukewarm and he just spits it out. That's what I was thinking whenever he's like, I don't care.
Well, I wasn't sure if the arm thing was reactive to water because it hadn't happened. He had a sip of water, and then it happened. So he went back to his room and he got another glass of water. So I was like, okay, is it reactive to water?
Maybe it's the water's doing it.
Right, but it wasn't.
There's something in the water.
It's in the water.
There's worms in that water. You got to boil it.
There's piss in it, too.
Well, that's how the worms get in it, from the piss.
Tasty.
Pee worms.
Well, urine is technically...
Yes, but if you're ever out in the nature...
I'm not
going to... Boil water, because the deer... And
boil
the
your pee.
Pee in it, and they have worms. So. Worms, all sorts of things. Anyways, survival tips from Synthaholics.
Urine in space.
It's worms in space, right? Exactly. So he starts asking the computer about Starfleet's medical database about symptoms of transporter psychosis.
So this one, he's Googling his symptoms. It's
have you ever Googled symptoms? You're like, that's me. And it's always like, oh my God,
cancer.
See,
it's transporter psychosis.
That's exactly what it is. I've not, because I'm not going to say that I am a hypochondriac, because I'm not, but because I have anxieties, I always go to my mother, who's a nurse, and I try not to. Okay. It's funny how he says, you know, maybe it's because I'm so learned about this is why I'm so scared of it.
Sure.
That's kind of my thought process on, like, I can't dig too deep into things. Doctor tell me, and I won't accept it. On the first go, I'll question you, but I don't want to know the inner. Like when I think about the inner workings of the human body, I freak out. Like, I don't know.
Just funny though. Every time I've done anything, like, it's like, oh, I wonder what these symptoms are, because I, you know, like you feel off or something's happening with your body, and every time die. It's like, it's always like,
as cancer. The last,
it's cancer. You're like, fuck. Cancer. I know I got cancer. Right. You know, and then you go to the doctor. He's like, no, you just have a skin rash. You're like, oh, right.
Right.
At least it wasn't cancer. Thank goodness.
Yes. Did you sit on a strawberry? Because it's a stain.
No, Mr. O'Brien, sat on a strawberry.
Don't use strawberries as butt plugs.
Well, I can't help you there.
Or tie a rope to it first. Don't lose it.
So he's keeping quiet about all this craziness at this moment. But it is funny to see Barclay's reactions to all the effects or the hallucinations and symptoms of transport psychosis. Mm-hmm. I was laughing, just watching his reactions. So it's pretty good. Next, we have Crusher giving her reports about the ship's crew that she found. And they're talking about if it has something to do with the container which exploded aboard the Yosemite. And LaForge and Data are going to go to basically look at that container and see if it has any of this ionization that brought this guy back to life for a second. So they're gonna basically take one of those containers and they're gonna beam in plasma from that stream that's coming off the stars, and they're going to try to recreate, and they put a force field around it. So
you can't have that plasma flying around the inside of the Enterprise. Well, people might not like that.
Yeah. Yes, right. So
might impregnate Troy again.
Let's not do that. So that's the plan for that. They're going to recreate this this experiment that seemed to go wrong on the Yosemite. Then while they're doing that, Data mentions to Geordi that he noticed that Barclay is preoccupied with his looks like something's going wrong with him. He keeps on checking his pulse, and then he's checking his eyesight. And Geordi goes, thanks. And he just says, hey, why don't you get some rest? And then he calls Counselor Troy to check up on him. And we have a scene of Troy waiting in the hallway and sees Barclay walk by. And she's speed walking. And she's almost chasing him. It's like, I've been trying to call you. You haven't returned my calls. And he says, I'm fine. You know, and she says, you seemed agitated. And she relieves him of duty.
You're a danger to yourself and to others.
Yes.
Yeah, so can I sleep over with you then?
Yes, she says no. Aww. And then, but then when he tries to go back to his quarters and he tries to relax, his arm is glowing like he was before. And we had that great scene with the birds.
With the birds.
Yeah, when he's trying to do the relaxation, he's got the birds chirping.
Oh, yeah, the noises and he's like, seagulls.
And some more birds. And some more birds.
And then it gets so chaotic sounding.
And then it's so insane. And he goes, oh, forget it. I don't know. It's just so funny, man. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but Barclay really was tickling my funny bone.
Yeah, Dwight Schultz is very good.
It's really good. How they did this whole episode was funny. So Barclay decides he's going to go to the transporter room. He wakes up O'Brien. I don't know what hour, but he was like, couldn't this wait for a couple hours?
O'Brien doesn't leave the transporter room. He goes there when Keiko yells at him.
Yeah, he just sleeps on his transporter pad. So he gives O'Brien an order that he has to send him over that over to the Yosemite and back. Which, Dave, doesn't that seem like it's breaking some kind of protocol without being ordered to go?
Wouldn't he need permission
from the captain or Geordi or something?
I don't know. I mean, it's probably breaking some sort of protocol going over to a ship that's in distress without, you know, prior authorization from the captain. But, you know, people take shuttlecrafts all the time, even teenagers. So, I mean, the security seems very lax on the Enterprise. So Worf is doing a piss poor job at making sure the ship is secure and having some kind of rules in place so this kind of things don't happen.
Aren't they science officers?
But O'Brien is an enlisted man, so he doesn't really have a rank. So
yeah, he's enlisted. Yeah,
so he's just a chief petty officer. So Dwight Schultz does, you know, as a regular officer, does have seniority and is able to give him orders. So
gotcha.
Yeah, well, O'Brien, I think by the time he gets to Deep Space Nine, he's like about the top rank you could be for an enlisted guy. And Barclay, I think, is a junior grade lieutenant.
Yeah.
So, but he's still a lieutenant. That's pretty, you know, it's impressive. Nothing, you know, nothing to sneeze at. Well, anyways.
I was going to say something, but I don't know that I should.
Go ahead. Do it.
What were you going to say?
Just like, you know, in the military, you know, junior Marines can still be lieutenants and not know what the F they're talking about.
Yeah, but that's they didn't go to officer school, right?
No, if you're a lieutenant, a first lieutenant or whatever, you did go to officer school. But
oh, did you? Okay.
Most of the, at least from my understanding, when you go officer, you finish your schooling first, and then you go to boot camp, and then you do go to officer candidate school and then, or officer training school, one of the two. And then you go right into your like billet and you could be in charge of Marines who have been deployed before and you've never been deployed, but you're in charge of them.
Sure. That's always like the running gag with every World War One movie I've ever seen. It's like the guys have been in the trenches and they're all like, you know, they just know everything. They've seen it all. You know, they're grizzled. They've seen all the war. And then some guy comes from officer school and he's like, hello, chaps, I'm here to save you. And they're like, fuck
their
off.
Their boot lieutenant comes in and they're like, who the fuck do you think you are? And they're like, yes, sir.
I know.
Exactly. I'm the boss.
Yeah, like I got myself an education.
Right.
I can tie my shoes. Mm-hmm. So.
So anyways, yeah, so he beams himself. He orders himself to be beamed over. So he gets beamed over, and this is where he sees the creature again.
And it starts making out with him, and it's a weird...
It's like, hey, baby.
It's like some weird...
Why don't you give me a kiss?
Some weird transporter tentacle porn going on.
There's no tentacles, just a big mouth. It's like a flying fleshlight.
It's
a,
and Barkley was never the same again after getting the blowjob from the blowjob monster.
Wait, it cured his anxiety. He so wants, I guess it's a win-win, right?
He wants to go on the transporter any chance he can get in hopes the blowjob monster will blow him mid-transport.
The blowjob monster.
Ridiculous, David.
It has no other function. It's a mouth and it's really long.
That's really funny, actually.
It's the dreaded blowjob monster. It doesn't have any teeth, neither.
It seems like an 80s movie that just should have happened.
We should make an 80s movie called The Blowjob Monster.
There's a movie called Teeth where a girl's vagina has teeth and it eats penises.
I could see that happening.
That was like a South. That was like a South Park isn't thing. That, where like,
isn't that basically the Sarlacc pit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I'm joking.
I don't know.
like if like predators' mouths look like their vaginas too. Like you know, like they bite you. Yeah. You do not want to have sex with a predator.
No, I think that just goes without saying.
Where do you kiss them?
What an awkward situation that would be.
Yes. Well, let's not do most alien sex in that world is probably not good. You know, the aliens themselves, the xenomorphs or whatever they're called.
Oh, man, yeah.
They're friggin' ridiculous.
Well, considering their blood is acid, their liquid, their other secretions would probably be acid, too. You'd melt your dick off.
Ugh.
Yep.
Or any other parts. So anyway,
anything it gets on, so you can't finger it or anything. You miss your finger.
Moving on.
So we get the creature. He sees the creature again, and then he tells O'Brien, "Wake the senior staff." If I was O'Brien, it's like, can't you do that?
Right.
Shit rolls downhill. Like,
he's just giving orders.
Yeah, but they like O'Brien.
Yeah, I guess they're like, oh, O'Brien's
they probably like him better than Barkley.
Oh yeah, they're probably like, O'Brien called me. I wonder what he wants.
Right.
Such a good transporter officer or chief, not an officer as we belabored. Basically said. Yes. So he goes over what he saw with the senior staff, and then Picard orders a diagnostic of the transporter system and has a level 3 security alert, and Crusher wants to run a microcellular scan on him and to see what's going on with his body. So Barclay, she goes through and she finds the same ionization going on in his body that the burnt engineer dead officer
somebody, yeah. Yes,
is happening. So, and she believes that he has got some of these microbes that are in there. Now, this is where it starts kind of falling apart to me, is they start saying that, you know, when you're in mid-beaming, sometimes things can look bigger than they really are. I think Data makes that comment.
Yeah.
It's like a TARDIS.
I'm like, what?
It didn't really make too much sense to me either, because anytime you even the way they made it look from his perspective when he was being transported, it's not like, you know, the rooms went in and out of shape and stuff. It was just all, you know, basically pixelating. So that didn't make sense to me either.
Right.
I think they're just saying that when you turn into a molecule, but I mean, if you turn into a molecule, you shouldn't be able to notice anything. It's interesting that they present the transporters as like you're totally conscious of the entire thing, whereas in real life, it would kill you and then just reassemble a clone of you at the destination.
And I recall like in Wrath of Khan, like they are having discussions while they're beaming.
Oh yeah,
and I'm just like, I don't think you can do that. I mean, anyways, so now they try to reattempt the conditions of the Yosemite by beaming aboard the container of plasma, and when they start doing a resonance scan through a frequency resonance scan, it explodes. It is contained by the force field, and then LaForge sees these biomagnetic energy, which he thinks they're alive, and then Barkley then collapse all glowy and has to go to sick bay again.
Aww.
So, and that's what we say, we find out that basically he's filled with these microbes that's very similar to what he saw at the what they saw, but what the engineer of the Yosemite probably has. So
too many space blowjob monsters.
And so they devise a way going in the transporter room is by if they get them in midstream, the biofilters of the transporter will be able to recognize these plasma microbes that are out there and be able to filter them out. But he's going to probably have to be in midstream for about a minute. But it's potentially dangerous because if his pattern degrades too far, they could completely lose him. So that's what they plan on doing. And obviously, this is Barclay's worst fear, just to be stuck midstream forever, right?
He is not happy with that. But I think a part of what triggered his fear was the fact that they had to do that bridge. Because I don't think he's normally as scared of the transporter.
He says he logged a lot of hours on the shuttlecraft just to avoid it.
Oh, that's true.
So they start the process. They go to the transporter room. We have Crusher there. She's monitoring the biofilters. So is LaForge, trying to get them to pick up on what they're looking for. And then, obviously, Chief O'Brien is just trying to make sure that he gets there and back safely. When he's in there, obviously, he sees this creature, and it comes at him, and he decides to just
embrace it.
Which was just, I didn't get it. Like, he explained it, but he didn't explain it. He's like, when I realized there were more of them, I don't know, his reasoning didn't explain how he knew that it was a person.
He didn't have to hold the hair for the blowjob monsters. I don't know why he needed to
grab that. Wow, look at, you're just going all the way with this, aren't you? you're no hold bar anymore.
Nope.
Cannot escape it.
These jokes are coming at you. So
he wanted to bring it home. He wanted it off the transporter. He didn't want to have to transport for it. I need this in my life. And then it turned out to be a dude.
It'd be funny if they got married.
Oh, my God.
And Barclay lived happily ever after with the
Barclay, do you take this blowjob monster to be your lawfully wedded wife? I do.
Your lawfully wedded blowjobber.
Yeah. Wouldn't it have been husband? Because it was a guy that he actually pulled out.
Yeah, well, this is where it really gets weird. So when he does grab him and he rematerializes, the blowjob monster turns into one of the crew members of the Yosemite.
Prince Charming, it's like a frog. Like, you kiss the prince and it turns into a frog.
Oh, you're my blowjob monster.
But he doesn't, like, you don't see him turn into the human. You literally see the worm, and then he's materialized, and it's a man again.
Right. And then Worf and his security team do the same thing, and they grab the rest of them, and they save those members of the USS Yosemite.
Yosemite.
And they get these energy microbes are kind of filtered out, so they're cleaned with the filtering process of the transporter, so they're good for that. And Barclay's a hero. Then we get the last scene where O'Brien meets Barclay at 10 forward, and he shows him his pet tarantula, Christina. And he says, let me just go get you a drink. It's probably his revenge for having to run two diagnostics on the transporter.
On the one transporter.
Perhaps.
How does Keiko let him keep that thing?
Well, Keiko's, you know, she's into all
that. Why wouldn't she like spiders?
Oh, I can just see her not liking spiders.
Well,
I guess Christina died before we went to Deep Space Nine, because I don't think we ever see Christina ever again.
Yeah, it probably got sat on.
Keep your eye out for the tarantula box.
That's right. Realm of Fear, that wraps up there. And Holly, what did you think of this episode?
I didn't think the name matched the episode.
Realm of Fear?
Yeah. It didn't really describe the episode at all.
Oh, interesting.
To me, I guess. I realize that he's fearful and paranoid and anxious the entire episode, but it didn't really the name just didn't mesh to me. I thought it was kind of poorly named.
I agree with that, because it seems like it'd be a scarier episode, and it's Barclay. Barclay episodes are usually on the funnier side or sillier side.
Well, yeah, I didn't care for that, but yeah, the anxiety part of it was relatable, obviously not to the extent that he went to, and I'd never been dematerialized, but
have you tried plexing though?
I have not tried flexing. I need to learn this skill.
I need to find where that is.
Right. When I saw that, I was like, that's all I got to do? Really?
So if you flex and vape at the same time, you should be doing good. Vape some CBD.
I don't know that I could do all those at the same time. Like walking and chewing gum. You want me to plex and vape and walk and talk and think?
Yes.
That's not going to work for me. It's not going to work for me.
Multitasking, no, Ollie. Practice makes perfect.
I cope very well with my anxiety, so I think I'll be good without the plexing. But that would have been really cool to know if that's even a thing. It's probably not. But
I don't think it is.
I don't. It probably is not.
It's a beta Z technique, so I'm sure it doesn't really exist.
It could just be a mental thing, too. Like, that's really how you get past anxiety, is mentally training yourself to be okay with the things that you're not okay with. So. Sure. Sure. I mean, it wasn't a terrible episode, except for the unexplained things. You know, like you said, when the episode starts to fall apart, yeah, because it's like, oh shit, we've got 15 minutes to wrap up this episode. Let's just do this.
Yeah,
see how it goes.
right. But, I don't. Yeah, the whole thing with them, the blowjob monsters turning into people. It's just they explain it like real quickly, but it's like that doesn't make any damn sense.
It does not at all.
And
he would have had to have seen it in human form in order to understand that it wasn't there to attack him. It didn't make sense.
And on top of that is the idea that how did those people stay in the matter stream for that long? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
They did mention something about being able to stabilize and keep them there, but yeah, it was like briefly, it was just passed over.
It was a one line throwaway line that they didn't explain it. They just said, oh, they just did this thing. I don't remember what it was. And that's how they
must have found a way to blah, blah, blah. That basically is what Jordy says.
Yeah. Lots of transporter technobabble in this episode.
It is technobabble, and it doesn't make a lot of sense. Just that I think that really doesn't. The creature turning into the people, it didn't make a lot of sense to me, because why would it? And then the idea of, you know, that those crew members could stay alive in that state. I mean, they were worried they were going to lose Barclay, and he was only in there for what? Maybe 2 minutes at most?
I don't know if it was that. Well, when he was going in, they were like, maybe 40 seconds, hopefully less.
Seemed a lot longer than that.
Well, hey, Scotty survived for like 20, 30 years, but not Franklin.
Yeah, but he put himself on the pattern buffer, so he just kept on buffering him back and forth. So he was like continually beaming. So,
but Scotty ate Franklin, though. You know what I'm hearing in my head
right now?
What?
I'm hearing the dial-up tone. Just like...
Bing, 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 bong.
That's right.
Just buffering.
Yes.
Totally off base.
Here. Dave, what did you think of this episode?
So I remember seeing this episode as a child in Annapolis, Louisiana, and I remember I tried plexing. I was like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. I want to feel better. It didn't do anything for me. Star Trek's false advertising.
Yes. But in so many ways.
Yeah, but I was like a kid walking around like beating two fingers on the back of my neck, and like people probably thought I was like retarded. Like,
they probably thought you had a tick.
Well, I didn't get reported for Tourette's, so that's good. But no,
I have a nervous tick, though. It doesn't have to be Tourette's.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't do it for very long because it didn't do anything for me. But people still probably thought it was weird.
They probably did.
I was like, it's Star Trek. I'm making myself better.
And if you said that, it would probably make them equally think that you're weird.
It'd probably make it worse.
They'd be like, what? What'd that kid just say?
Yeah, it's a pretty good episode, but it does fall apart for me in the same kind of points where they kind of start glossing over stuff, because there's so much like technical stuff. They talk about the transporter early on, and then they keep adding more and more. So it's like it's almost like a term paper on how the transporter works, and they built an episode around how does the transporter work, and then on the important stuff like why the people were blowjob monsters and how they stayed alive forever, they just glossed over that real quick.
But
they were good. I always enjoyed Dwight Schultz on camera. He's fun to watch because he's almost like the embodiment of us, like, because he doesn't seem like he's a future person. He seems like he'd be like the closest analog to like you or me or Holly on the ship, being like, what's this going to do to us? Like, it seems like he's out of time. Like, he seems like he's from our time more than he is from their time.
Yeah.
He's more like a direct analog for us, the viewer, rather than that character that belongs there.
That's one of the reasons when I was younger, I never liked Barclay, because I was like, you know, they all got to be, you know, the Rikers and the Picards and Datas of that world. You know, they should be these should be the best of the best, and they're amazing people to look up to. And then Barclay comes around, and he's like, how the hell did he get signed up to this this post?
I also like how they were in sickbay this episode. They did call him Broccoli accidentally. I think they just glossed over it.
But yeah, so I was just going to say is that the one thing about it is that I totally changed on that. It's like I loved the performance, and I loved Barclay in this, and he makes this episode. Without Barclay, this episode would just be stupid. It's just so fantastic. It really is. It's so fun to watch, and just seeing all his, you know, goofy, you know, facial, you know, tics and weird things he does, and it's just great. I don't know. I just loved him.
Yeah, Barclay's such a great character. You know, what were your biggest takeaways other than that, Aaron?
Most of the same things. I mean, like I said, the explanation of these creatures are turning into people just dumb. They could have done a lot of different things. It just made no sense. The fact that you'd be in mid-matter stream and you could still see anything, I mean, it just really makes little sense at all to me. I can see you're sort of like half beamed in, half beamed out. And maybe because it took them so long to make that connection between the Yosemite and the Enterprise because of that, because they're in that middle of that plasma stream, that it took them a lot longer. So maybe he had a chance to see that at that point. But anyways, it just, yeah. Whole things seem preposterous. It just, it's fascinating that a guy like Dwight Schultz playing Barclay, you know, basically takes over the whole episode. I mean, they gave him a whole episode, and he's a side character at best. He's really not a main character. So mm-hmm. I don't even remember if he's listed in the very beginning when the whole all the credits are in the very beginning of the show.
Oh, he's not, but he's probably one of the first names that pop up after the show starts. Like special guest star Dwight Schultz or something like that.
I know, but he should have been like, you know, I don't know. Just it's fascinating that they would give him that much of airtime. So anyways, that's his goofy character is what makes the show. Everything else is kind of whatever, you know. But what I want to talk about is fears. Like, what do we have for fears? Like,
fear is the mind killer.
Yes, exactly, as they would say in Dune. Dave, do you have any irrational fears of anything?
Oh, okay. Irrational fear? I definitely have an irrational fear. Like, I work in a not-so-great part of town,
mm-hmm.
and there's the way I used to go home, there's kind of tall buildings, or, like, not super tall, but it's like an old factory, so it's kind of tall, like, as compared sure. to a car. And I just have, like, an overactive imagination where it's just, like, you know, I sometimes, like, fear that there might be, like, a sniper, like laser point on me, so I, like, look in the rear view mirror to make sure I don't see like red dots on me anywhere. Just
really,
like,
you worry about someone sniping you?
It's not like a serious worry, but it's like a weird like it's totally irrational. Like just like because it's dark, it's dark outside. It's just I don't know. Like it's the weirdest thing. Like I don't think I've ever done anything to upset anyone who could snipe me. And if I have, I'm deeply I'm sorry. But it's for an irrational fear. That's probably one of mine. Like just sitting in my car waiting for a light to turn and just like you know having like a red dot like show up on me like a laser sight or something. It'd just be like
I'd be more freaked out of like maybe some like you know like ghostly figure or something sneaking up on you or you look in the corner and there's like something looking at you from like. Abandoned window or something like that. You know, that would be freak me out more.
Oh, that would be freaky, but I haven't seen anything like that. Although I have seen,
but you've never seen a sniper light on you.
No, but I mean but a sniper light is something in the real world that could you know, that could happen. Although snipers probably don't use laser sights; they probably just have a really good scope.
But in the real world, who's gonna snipe you?
Nobody. I don't know. I don't think I've made any upset that upset. No, I'm saying it's an irrational fear. But as far as like things like that, I've had seen like or I thought I've seen like weird things. They didn't really scare me. They just kind of like startled me. Like I was at a 7-Eleven once, and I thought I saw like a creature walk in the door. It was just out of the corner of my eye, but when I looked at him, it looked like he was a regular person. But it's just my perception from just seeing them from my peripheral vision seemed like he was like some kind of monster. I've seen weird things, but nothing that's really scared me. But as far as an irrational fear, that's probably one of my top irrational fears, the laser dot at night mm-hmm. in a bad part of town.
Holly, do you have an irrational fear?
I don't really think so. I mean, when I was little,
vaping.
When I was little, I remember being terrified of the devil. There was this one time when my my parents were in a meeting and I was out in the car and it was sunset, and the sunset was so bright red that I thought that Satan was coming for me because of something I did.
What did you do?
I don't know.
I killed a man.
Did you burn down a house or something?
No, I was a very space cadet when I was little. I was in my own little world all the time. I probably made up a bunch of terrible things about me that didn't actually happen. I probably thought I was the worst person in the world. I don't know. I do get, every time I go downstairs, I get anxious. I'm afraid that I'm going to fall down the stairs. Probably one, because of my bad knees, and two, I actually fell down the stairs once with my niece. Mm. Now, she wasn't a toddler, but it was like
she was little.
She was, you know, seven. So
right.
It was like, oh, okay. But yeah, I hate going downstairs. But no, I don't really. You know, I don't believe in like demons. I don't accept them into my heart. So I don't have to fear that. I don't like when it's dark outside and my shades are open. I like to close my shades because I don't want people looking in at me when I can't see them. So maybe that's kind of a,
I don't know if that's a rational fear
thing.
that might be just good precaution.
Yeah, true.
It's like, how does this seem so much more solid during the day when you can't readily see inside them, but when it's dark and there's lights on, the windows are open, the houses seem very...
You feel boxed in.
They seem very not as safe, just where they look.
I think it's just because you are not able to be prepared for what's on the other side of the wall or the window because you can't see.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, you know, and rightfully so, people use that to their advantage all the time.
Absolutely. You can, at night, you can't see out because the light is reflecting off your window. But in the daytime, there's not as much, you know, there's more light coming in, so you can see what's going on. So
yeah. It's kind of the opposite. Yeah. Because at night, it's easy to see in, but it's hard to see out.
I think it's a natural thing during the dark. I think that's just who we are as people. It's like, obviously, we can't see, so that's. Scares us because that's one of our primary senses we use. Mm-hmm. You know, so
I like to be prepared.
What is it? What are your irrational fears, Aaron?
Yeah.
I guess my biggest one, honestly, is using or anything has to do with bathrooms that are not mine. I'm just real, real fussy with it. Not fearful, but just I'll really try to hold it as much as possible if I have to. Not to say I would, especially, taking a deuce. I just, no. Don't want to do it.
Is the fear germs or is the fear
I don't like the
they
germs.
Could have a camera in here somewhere?
Camera. I mean, if they want to do that, you know, God bless them. They're poor people. They don't need to see any of that. If that's really what your thing is, but I think you're in for a sad day.
Right.
It's more of just the germs. It's not so much like if I go to any of your house, I'd be like freaked out. It's more of like if I go to like a big public, you know, like you're at a department store or something like that. I'm like, no. I mean, I'd have to, not that I wouldn't if I really had to.
Well, if you ever go to Mardi Gras on Bourbon Street, take Imodium. You do not want to take a shit in any of those places.
Well, yeah, I think that goes without saying.
I didn't even, like, I had to pee, and I really didn't even want to pee in those places. They were so horrible. I mean, Mardi Gras is a good time, but I mean, like, you do not want to go to the bathroom in Mardi Gras.
Isn't there a lot of public urination?
I don't know, but they miss the toilets all sorts of kinds of ways.
Yeah, and that's the other side of it is, like, so, you know, obviously I got kids, and, you know, I have a little girl, and I, you know, never grew up at being a girl, and I'm like, I have to take her into bathrooms, and I always feel like, oh. You know, like, you women have to deal with terrible things using those bathrooms. So I always feel bad, you know. Yeah. And I was like, when we're leaving, I was like, you know, I ask her, do you have to use the bathroom? Because, like, now would be a good time to go.
Would be a great time to go now.
Yes, before I have to take you to some weird place that I, you know, some truck stop bathroom.
Right. So, some of those bathrooms are so
horrible, yeah.
And it's like, I don't get it. It's like, you know, it's like, okay, a department store or like a McDonald's or something like that, I get it. Like, maybe they don't have time to clean them as often. But like, if you're in a restaurant or a place that's where you are, you should be trying to clean that pretty regularly, especially for a sole proprietorship.
Yeah, you know, they say if you want to know the cleanliness of someone's kitchen, look at their bathroom.
Yes.
And it is like when I started at the Chipotle up in upstate New York, I was appalled, and I was supposed to close the dining. I was supposed to close the dining room, and I spent 2 hours scrubbing the two bathrooms there, and somebody else had to do my job, and we were an hour late getting out of work. But the manager was like, everybody needs to come in and look at the bathrooms because this is how they should look all the time.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's not hard. It's an extra 4 minutes. Just clean the bathroom. But you're right. Yeah.
They're really gross. And it's like, honestly, if you're in a place like that, the manager should have like a regular time, like every hour, somebody come in and just check it, clean it, whatever. You know, mm-hmm. Especially some places like, you know, freaking Starbucks. And those people think it's their house.
Yeah.
You know. Anyways.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Bathrooms
are. Yes.
Is that your only one, Aaron?
That's a pretty big one, honestly. Yeah. I get really skeeved out. I'm not even saying a little bit. I get really skeeved out, and I will avoid them if I have to. And not to say I never will. Yeah, I will avoid them. I mean, I'm lucky being a guy because if I just have to pee, I can use a urinal, so that's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. I can be in and out without really touching anything other than just washing my hands real quick. But yeah, especially big public bathrooms, they just freak me out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of big public bathrooms. I would say like just dying is one of my other just irrational fears.
Dying? Well, dying is not a rational fear. It's a very common fear. I think everyone has a dying fear.
It is, but like I've had like even like when I was young, I had lots of dreams where I was like murdered or killed in my dreams. Or
obviously, if you think snipers are going to take you out.
So I mean, like I've had like lots of weird things with dying in dreams, and it's just not fun. So, I mean, like, I might have a more irrational fear of that than the average person just because, like, it's been in my dreams a whole lot growing up. Like, my dreams are usually bad if I remember them.
My mom always said that if you have a relationship with Christ, and then you shouldn't be upset about death. And I don't really think about death anymore, but I get like I'm getting anxious right now thinking about dying, and mainly it's for like Michael. Like I would be so upset for him if I died.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's for other people too. Like you know, it's you know, in being in a relationship, that definitely makes it different, and wanting to not disappoint the other person.
Yeah.
Sorry, I died.
Sorry. But no, it's just weird. I mean, like, I understand what your mom's point, and it's valid, because, I mean, I grew up in the church, too, but I mean, like, you know, having dreams about it, like, having dreams about it somewhat often is not, like, super settling for the psyche, and being, and those are the dreams, like, why can't I remember a sex dream? That would be great to remember, but no, I remember the dream where I was, like, suffocated by, like, some weird neck brace thing. A blowjob
monster?
No, it was not a blowjob monster. No, I was, like, I was suffocated by some kind of, like...
Full body.
Jonah and the whale.
By some kind of, like, gel. Like, they rubbed this gel on my back, and it just seeped into my lungs, and I just, like, drowned. Like, even though I was, like, above water, it was like, crazy. Like, I had some weird... You should
look into interpreting your dreams, and maybe that will help. Because a lot of times, what you're actually dreaming about isn't what your dreams are about.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah. I was chased by a dinosaur. I've been lost in mazes, like, underground bunkers, chased by killer clowns. Like, really weird. all sorts of weird dreams. Yeah.
I don't have a fear of dying. It doesn't even cross my mind other than like, be careful driving and, that kind of thing. Like, I really doesn't even cross my mind. I mean, I fear more for my family than myself. So I would be like, I want them to be safe and, you know, everything. But I have no fear whatsoever. It doesn't even really cross my mind of me dying. So.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to add earlier about how I do live with anxiety, and it's hard to pinpoint what my fears on anxiety, like what brings on my anxiety, but kind of like what you just said about when you're driving, like I get very, 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 very anxious if I'm next to like a large truck. because every single time I try to pass one, I get the image in my head that they're going to blow a tire and crush me because they're going to swerve. Ooh. So that's probably irrational. But every single time, every time I'm passing one.
Yeah, but Holly, I think that's actually just defensive driving, honestly. I think as you get older, and I'm not saying that you're older, Holly, I'm just saying as you get more experience in life, I think you realize that things do go wrong. And the more you put a little like barrier between you and other things, you know, same thing with me. If I know I'm in some like truck's blind spot, I either brake or speed up, you know, so I know I'm not there. Nothing will happen. Just little things like that. It's just knowing, because you can think like tires do blow out on these trucks. You know, I was driving back home from vacation. This is years and years ago, me and my wife, and a boat was being one of their windshields of a boat flew off and hit my truck.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't shatter my windshield, but it cracked it really bad and did a lot of damage to the truck. So that I was in, totally freaked us out. You know,
we thought
just like weird shit can happen, you know, especially on thruway. So
on that note, 14A that runs up, Seneca Lake between Watkins Glen and Geneva.
Yeah.
I was working at a plant nursery on 14A. I think it's 14A. No, it's not 14A. It's something else. But anyway, I was working in a plant nursery there, and a truck was, I don't know, hauling one of those presses that they use when they lay new like roads. Not like a steamroller, but kind of looked like a steamroller.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Well, he was trailing behind this guy's truck, and the chain broke. And it was the craziest sound right in front of the plant nursery on the other side of the street. What happened was it crossed the road into oncoming traffic, went into the ditch, came up, jumped up, and then landed on a bunch of grapevines in the vineyard.
Wow.
And it was so terrifying. I was weeding, but we're all just outside. And look up, and there's like dust and grapes in the air, and it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Nobody got hurt.
Wow, that's amazing.
Tell me how that happened.
Yeah, right? Right, exactly.
Oh, another one of my fears, I just remembered since we're talking about bad things that happen in cars. I was in a rollover accident because the guy tried, you know, those round off on a throughway, they take you onto a regular street. It's just that big circle.
Yeah.
They kind of go up a hill. Anyway, the guy who was driving the guy was almost at the exit, but the guy driving decided he was going too slow, so he sped up around him, barely cut him off in time to get onto the roundabout, to get off the interstate. He was going way too fast, fishtailed, flipped the car twice, and it dumped me out on the half roll of the third roll, and then it caught traction before it rolled over fully and crushed me.
You were in the vehicle?
I was in the vehicle. I was thrown from the vehicle. Jesus. And I was almost crushed, but he fortunately was a speed demon. No, unfortunately, because we had the accident. But fortunately, he still had his foot on the gas, which kept it from rolling over on top of me. Because I was dumped out of the car, and the car pulled forward. It was like 20.
That's some Aladdin shit right there.
It was like, yeah, it was
like when the tower rolls over him.
Pretty much, yeah. It dumped me out, and then the car pulled forward. It was like 20, 30 feet away from me by the time I realized I was outside of the car.
Wow.
And every time I get on one of those roundabouts now, I slow down really slow because I don't ever want to get flipped again. So those things freak me out. When other people take them faster than I take them, I like grab the handlebar because those roundabouts freak me out because I don't want to get thrown from a vehicle ever again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good goal in life.
That's pretty scary.
I didn't, but I was basically unscathed. I mean, I had like a bunch of scrapes on my chest and belly, but other than that, I was fine. No broken bones or anything, but yeah. I've been thrown from a vehicle.
But going with the, you know, the Barclay thing, I think a lot of it's like, you know, they're trying to say like, you know, like people have fear of flying, you know, on planes and stuff like that. And, you know, okay, it makes sense. You know, you're on a plane and all of a sudden plane goes down.
Well, I'm scared of how small the seats are and how uncomfortable they are.
Well, that's a good thing too. But like I was trying to bring out is that a lot of stuff like you're saying is that those are experiences that actually prove to you that, you know, driving in cars can be extremely dangerous, which they are. You know, there's just too many operators out there on all states. Some people are fine, but other people have, you know, working on probably 4 hours sleep. Some people have been drinking. Some people are high.
Some people are just assholes. Like the guy who threw me. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's tons of things like that. So, I mean, that's, you know, there's
Go ahead.
No, there's a good reason to be scared of those things.
Yeah. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Correct. But I don't think I have any real fears, like, aside from, you know, the ones that pop up through anxiety, which I can name. I mean, I don't like to disappoint people. Mm-hmm. So if I feel like I've disappointed someone, then I get, anxious. But it's I don't think I have any real fears that I'm, like, always afraid of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
If that makes sense. Like, I'm not afraid of spiders or snakes or I don't. Actually, I have recently not. I kind of get a little weirded out by spiders, but I think it's just because I'm back on the West Coast and spiders are different out here.
Yeah, right. No doubt.
So I don't know. I don't think I have anything that I'm really afraid of.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
I guess. I
mean, you should have reasonable fears, you know, like there's irrational fears and then reasonable fears.
Right.
So. All right. Well,
actually,
why don't you? Yeah.
When I watched Willy Wonka, I was actually thinking about this when I watched this episode. When I watched Willy Wonka and Tommy, was it Tommy? The boy that...
Oh, right. Yeah,
Mike TV.
The boy
Mike
who could?
TV, when he's transmitted over, you know, he's above us in a billion tiny pieces. I was like, oh my God, I could never do that. And that actually scared me. So I was laughing at this episode when I made that connection, because I was like, yeah, I would never do that. Because when I was little, I was like, yeah, that scares me. I don't think I could do that.
A lot of people a lot of people are frightened by the Willy Wonka from before. And that guy who wrote them, he wrote a lot of stuff that scared young people. So for being children's books.
Dahl, right? Last name Dahl.
Yeah, Dahl. Oh, I can't remember. I've read some of the stuff to the kids. I just can't remember his first name.
Yeah.
Yeah. But a lot of people do get scared. So there's some scary stuff, though. Yeah, Dahl. What the hell is his name?
I don't think I have anything of his. I'm looking on my shelves. I don't really see any of his stuff.
Yeah, Roland Dahl.
Roland.
Yeah.
Roland.
Roland Dahl. Yeah.
Roland.
Roland on the river.
I'm so glad you got that, Dave.
You got it.
You got it.
Nice.
Hit me, baby, one more time.
Oh, God. You had to go there.
I didn't do Ice Ice Baby. Come on.
But you brought it up.
That wasn't Ice Ice Baby.
I know.
Oh.
I said I did. I said at least I didn't do Ice Ice Baby.
Oh, okay. I thought you said I had to do Ice Ice Baby, and I was like, David?
That's why it says hit me one more time, because I made ice. Gotta unfreeze me, like in the game when you get frozen. No.
Jeez. But all in all, I thought it was a good episode, except for the whole, you know, pointless ending.
Space blowjob monsters.
So, if you have a rational fear or some strange psychosis, let us know.
Yeah. You know what we should start doing? We should start having people hashtag the episode names at the Synthaholics.
Yeah, they could do that.
Like, tweet and let us know. Because that would be interesting to hear. I mean, I don't know where I was going with that, but
yeah, it would be interesting. People would be interesting. I'm afraid of spiders. I'm afraid of the color purple. You know.
Yeah. I'm scared of Grimace.
Grimace. Yeah. Exactly.
The purple. Stuff like that. The purple McDonald's mascot. He's frightening.
Whatever he is.
The giant gaping blowjob mouth. Oh, I'm sorry. No.
Oh boy. You got one thing on the mind.
McDonald's blowjob. No, sorry.
Yeah.
No, I think about more than one thing sometimes.
Two blowjob monsters.
Yes. Oh man.
Well, anything else we want to bring up with this episode?
I think that's it. It's a pretty simple episode, just lots of techno babble, so not a whole lot of message in there, I don't think, other than face your fears
don't Google your symptoms.
Flex your fears away and don't Google your symptoms. And I thought that was great because they did the Googling symptoms before Google was even a thing. And
okay,
they did successfully predict people Googling their own issues. I think it's hilarious.
That is true. Touche. Touche. Yes, there.
For sure.
Alexa, tell me about space madness.
Space madness, a form of psychosis when out in space for too long.
My Alexa said she didn't know.
Oh, really?
Well, that's good, Alexa. It's not a real thing.
So
not
yet. Helpful.
Sorry, I don't know that one.
Jeez.
Yeah, oh, I got great. Nothing else to add.
Neither does Alexa. All our music is provided by.
Can Alexa find your music?
Alexa, can you find music? Oh no! Don't ask her to find music. No. Alexa,
abort,
don't.
Abort.
Alexa, don't play music. Thank you. Alexa, stop.
Fucking robots.
Taking over the world. Taking over our podcast now.
They're taking over the podcast. Well, all our music is provided by Warp 11, except the intro. That's by Dave Wilkes. But Warp 11 you can find online at warp11.com or at Warp 11 on Twitter. And I'm sure they have Facebook pages, too, that they would love if you go ahead and hit that like button on. For us, you can find us online at synthaholics.com to listen to our podcast and see our website. For social media, we're on Facebook. You can check us out at facebook.com/group/synthaholics. And we also have a Facebook page, which we would also appreciate a like on. You can check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/synthaholics. And you can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. Email us any of your ideas for future episodes, any crazy Star Trek theories you have for if we ever get around to doing that Alex Jones Trek Wars episode. And anything else you want to email us, your thoughts on these episodes. If you have irrational fears, you can also send those to us in your email. We'd love to read those, especially if they're Star Trek-themed irrational fears or even any other kind of irrational fears. We can definitely talk about those since that was our topic of this week.
Or
tweet them at us. You can hashtag Synthaholic or, at Synthaholic Duo and hashtag the episode and what your irrational fears are. That would be amazing.
Be hilarious. Definitely go to Apple iTunes, rate and view us there, 5 stars, and let us know. Leave a comment so let other people know what you think of the show. Also, if you have a little money that you could throw our way, we appreciate you supporting the show. If you go to Patreon/Synthaholics, it just helps us keep on giving you more content. And as always, we always say, let somebody know about Synthaholics. It's a great way to support the show. Let your friends know, let your coworkers know when they're asking for podcast recommendations.
Everybody's involved with Facebook groups now. Let your Facebook groups know.
That's right.
Yeah, let your other Facebook groups know about us.
You could retweet the show. You could put us up on Reddit. You could,
if you guys use Reddit, you could start a Synthaholic subreddit. That would be fantastic. That'd be great. You could share our stuff there. And I don't think we mentioned our actual Twitter handles, but you can tweet us at Synthaholic Duo. And personally, I'm at David_J_Duncan, Aaron's at Blackbird2004, and Holly's at Lunar Thistle.
Mm, all those things are good.
Absolutely.
All of these things.
All of them.
So, reach out everyone. To us.
We love hearing from you guys.
We get scared when we don't hear from you.
That's our irrational fear that no one actually listens to the show.
I'm pretty sure we're just talking to a void.
I know Philip listens to us because he's messaged us on Facebook about it a couple of times. So yeah.
Well, maybe we just call, just do the Philip show,
the Philip Synthaholic show. Yeah, our one hard diehard listener. I know we got more. I just don't have a whole.
He responds. Yeah, he gets.
He's been giving us some really great feedback, like on each of the episodes that we put out the last couple of weeks. So I really appreciate that. So
thank you for that.
So anyone else wanting to give us feedback, Facebook group's a great place to do it. We definitely read it, and we try to take it to heart as best we can.
Absolutely. We try to.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you guys for joining me tonight. It was great talking with you all again. We're all here again. That's was great.
Yeah.
We'll live long and prosper, one and all. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. Look out for the space blowjob monster.
I have to worry about the blowjob monster.
No.
Watch for the space pussy looking monster.
Oh,
it's the cousin of the blowjob monster.
Yeah?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
I will come armed.
Just get that tongue, the tongue wobbling around.
She's like,
I will cut that fucking off.
Oh, man.
Holly does not like her cunning lingus.
He just wanted to be your friend, that's all.
Yeah. As long as it's my friend way over there.
It's a friends with benefits. It's the only thing it knows how to do is lick and suck.
Well, it needs to respect my boundaries.
There you go. Respect boundaries.
With a furious tongue lashing.
When that doesn't work, I have a sword.
There you go. That'll take off the
edge.
Yes.
just don't do it if they're sucking at one of us off, because you might take part of our pick penis with it.
Oh, don't do that.
So. I'll toss you your own sword. You can handle that yourself.
Wait for it to finish before you cut it off of us.
I think if I'm present, there might be an issue.
Oh my god!
Holly, help! It's the blowjob monster. Don't help too much.
Right.
Don't help so much.
I'll just finish, transporting, and I'll leave you be.
Yeah. Leave the room.
Excuse myself from the transmitter.
Holly, get a camera. We need this on film
for posterity.
You know what? Actually, would be funny if that hole when he grabs that the blowjob monster, it started like blowing him, and like everyone's awkwardly looking at him the whole time, like what the fuck do we do now?
Oh my god! And then he like comes to, and he's like actually getting his dick sucked.
Yeah.
Terrible. This is what's happening on Lower Decks, right?
I think I downloaded the wrong Star Trek.
It's hilarious.
Oh my god.
We got some great outtakes. For the end of the episode. More blowjob monster talk. It's great.
Explicit is what it is.
It is explosive whenever it does its job right.
Did you say explosive? I said explicit.
Oh. Well, that's that too. Although we're pretty explicit. We've been kind of good the last couple episodes. It just we hadn't been pushing the envelope too hard the last couple times. So I think it's about time.
I think one of our past weeks, every time you said something, I just talked over you.
Just kept going. Just keep going.
I'm sorry about that. But
thanks, Holly.
Had to be done.
What are we doing for next week?